have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
Welcome on in, everybody, to the boardroom. Maddie here alongside Johnny, Sam, and a very special guest. He writes for CBS, but this evening I think he's just here as an Illini fan. Can we call you top 10 famous alumni, Tom? Can we call you top 10
famous? That is sad. Yeah, sure.
I think it's Shad, Khan, you, the guys who started YouTube, and Io. And is that, can we put you up there?
Yeah, I don't think that bodes well for the school. Honestly, I think it reflects poorly on the school if we want to do it, but I'm all for it. Go for it.
Sure. And Nick Offerman. You and Nick Offerman are maybe like that same tier.
Hugh Hefner. I don't know. Oh. I mean, Playboy. So
that's a pretty good one too. That's a pretty good one. But thank you for joining the show here. Part of our Sweet 16 coverage here on the boardroom. Let's get right into it. We know that you have a lot of takes on how you feel, and you actually tweeted about this today. I pulled it up on the Big Ten regular season title, the Big Ten tournament, and the NCAA tournament success. You actually tweeted about it today. This is like legitimately perfect timing that you tweeted about it because I wanted to talk about it. You put the Big Ten regular season title number one, and then you said failing that, a Big Ten tournament, and the number three tournament success. So here we are, Sweet 16. How are you feeling given that list? And we're here, Tom, for the first time in almost 20 years in the Sweet 16. Like, would you like to amend that at all? I mean, how you feeling?
No, I mean, I'm very happy. And like I tweeted this morning too. Like it is very nice that for the first time in a long time, like I was sitting there thinking today as I was working and I'm sitting there monitoring Twitter and there or X or whatever, I don't know. And then, you know, there's the news of like coaching hires and there's all these players hitting the transfer portal. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, it is nice not to have, like, that's not my problem. That's their problem right now. Like, I'm not going to be doing a coaching search anytime soon. I don't need to worry about our players hitting the portal because the season just ended and everybody's feeling, you know, angry about everything. It's like, no, we're going to the Sweet 16. We get that extra week. It's really fun, the kind of like build up and the hype. And again, this is like that list of the way I feel about it. It's not that I don't care about tournament success. Like I want Illinois to win every damn game that they play. Like that is ultimately always going to be the goal. I want them to get to the tournament. I want them to win the tournament, but it's not the most important thing to me because I come at it from the aspect of it's a television event. It's not really a great way to determine a champion. It's a really fun way to determine the champion, but you don't like, the best way to put it, I think, is that the best team in the country sometimes wins the tournament. The best team in the Big Ten always wins the Big Ten. So when it comes to actually determining who the best team is at something, that's why I prioritize the Big Ten regular season title, because you can't fake that. You can't get lucky. You can't, like, no, let's just dog Michigan. Who cares? Michigan hires Dusty May. Nothing against Dusty May. He's a good basketball coach. But if Purdue doesn't lose to Fairleigh Dickinson last year, is Dusty May the coach at Michigan right now? Does anybody give a damn about FAU? And that's kind of what I mean by the randomness of the tournament. One guy getting hot from three with like an accountant's haircut, like Jack Golke, knocks Kentucky out of the tournament. You can knock Purdue out of the tournament, and it completely changed the fate of like programs, coaches, players, and all that stuff. And I just think that's kind of ridiculous because it's a one and done format. One bad game kills your entire season. I would rather look at the 30 game sample size as my determining factor of what was a good season or not.
The best team wins the Big Ten every year, except for, and you ended this man's life on, on Twitter today in 2021.
Weird battle to fight.
You pulled up the big guns right there. You even pulled up, you even went in the bold. You wrote, you know, since Michigan 2022 and since Illinois 2022. And you said, shit, let's keep going. Juwan Howard's record against Illinois, 0-8, right? You pulled out the statistics right there. Like, he picked a bad man to pick a fight with there.
Bad worst possible time to like try and to get into too.
Like I was trying to be like, it's an imp, like he brought it up. He's like, well, if the best team always wins, just for context for people who didn't see it, He said, then you finally admit that Michigan's the best team in the Big Ten in 2021, even though your entire fan base argues against it. And I said, well, that's kind of a different situation, seeing as there was a global pandemic going on and Michigan played, what, three or four fewer games. Illinois beat Michigan by 23 at their place without our best player. And then we went on to win the Big Ten tournament. And it's like, but if that's, then he mentioned that we lost to Loyola in the tournament after that. And I says, well, if you want to go into the area of what's happened since then, I don't know if you're, as a Michigan fan, have a whole lot of ground to stand on, because their program's gone to crap ever since that, you know, that season. They haven't done anything. So
no.
Yeah, I had to just let them know.
Just let them
yeah. Know. At the end of the day, we went 19-4 in that Big Ten stretch. They went 15-4. Like, mm-hmm. Their whole argument was, well, we have a better winning percentage. And we're like, just because you had a winning percentage after 17 games doesn't mean you were automatically going to win those games. Like, we finished half a game ahead of you in the regular season that mm-hmm. year. That's all you have to let them know.
But also, too, like, my argument with this guy was also, like, he was pinning my feelings on this stuff as the entire Illinois fan base. It's like, no, I prioritize yeah. this over it. Trust me, 90% of Illini fans feel very differently than I do about this. 90% of college basketball fans feel very differently about this than I do.
Well, then I'm curious. Like, let's just say Illinois wins the whole darn tournament. Mm-hmm. From an emotional perspective, are you not like, because you just won a national championship. You can't tell me, Tom, from like an emotional perspective, because I think about how I would feel if we won a natty and I'd be bawling here. And I think Johnny and Sam would be bawling their eyes out too. I was excited after we won the Big Ten a couple of years ago. I was really excited when we won the tournament, but I don't think emotionally that would pale anywhere nearly in comparison if we won the national championship. Are you telling me that your like emotional reaction wouldn't even be as strong as when we won the Big Ten a couple of years ago or when we won the tournament, Big Ten tournament?
Like I said, I'd be thrilled. I want them to win every game they played. And if they win a national title, that would be great. It would be really fun. It would be great for the program. It would be great for the future of the program. It'd be great for a whole lot of things. But to me, it wouldn't, and I would enjoy it. But to me, it would not mean as much as winning a Big Ten regular season. Hmm. It just won't.
Hearing you talk through it, like, and I mean, I think we all kind of know this, that March Madness is an entertainment event more than like, let's find the best champion. But it almost is like there's a void in college basketball of like, we never even like crown the correct champion sort of thing. And like, I think subconsciously I've probably thought about that before, but I think just like hearing you talk through it, it is weird to think like we go through this and then it's like, like we'll just kind of throw out like who had the best regular season and do this crazy format.
And the counter to it, like a counter argument that I hear is, well, if it's not going to the best team, then why is it so often the same, like, select few teams that are winning these tournaments? Like, well, because those programs are always good. So if you have a chance and you're in the tournament and you're getting high seeds, it increases your likelihood of winning. If you buy 20 lottery tickets and there's 100 in the bowl, you've got a much higher chance than the person who only has one. So it's like that situation. It is not completely random, but there is a lot of random results in the NCAA tournament that we just kind of ignore because we forget about them. Because you get to the end and a team is crowned a champion and we just decide they were the best team in the country. Sometimes they were. A lot of times they're not.
Right. No one talks about Duke losing to Lehigh. They talk about winning national championships.
Let me just like make a little bit of a counter argument, though. Like, I think part of the reason why winning the tournament would be so special is because it's like, it's going to happen one time in our lifetime. So like, that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be the best Illinois team to ever do it. Like it's going to be hard for an Illinois team, if this team were to win it all, to be like, yeah, they were better than 05. But like the chances of it happening make it that much better. So I feel like that's why we appreciate it so much. I feel like your argument, Tom, is like, I don't know, when you talk about like, when were we the best? It's like, it's when you win the Big Ten, right? And I feel like the way you look at it is almost like a college football fan's lens, and maybe also why you care about the Big Ten tournament. Like, it's the ACC fans view their tournament almost like the college football conference championship game. For whatever reason, the Big Ten tournament, like, I feel like most fans don't view it the same as like the Big Ten championship game in Indy. And maybe it's just because the stakes are a little bit lower.
And a part of it is also there's no opinion involved. Like in the Big Ten regular season, your record is your record. It doesn't matter. Like if somebody thinks you're better than the other team or not, it doesn't matter. You went 18-2, they went 17-3, you're the champ. In the Big Ten tournament, like in the NCAA tournament, there is luck involved because it's also a one and done format. And again, one person. But your seed is based on your results from the regular season, not a net ranking, not a KenPom, not an RPI, none of that. It's just they're 16-4, they're the 4 seed, you're 15-5, you're the 5 seed. Sorry, you don't get the double bye. It's going to be a little bit more difficult for you. So that's why I look at them as better designs for actually determining who the best team is. And for me, that's really what it's about. Like, I want to know who the best team is. To me, that should be the end goal if you're going to have a playoff. But I say that knowing that it is very, very difficult to achieve that, particularly in a sport like this where there's, what, 362 teams now at the Division I level? I don't even know.
63, yeah, something right around that.
So it's there's no right way to do it. But so it's like I don't get mad about the format. It's just to me, it's never going to be as important.
What if we did like bowl? We did like college football. Where we just did bowl games, and then the top 8 play in a tournament, but it's like best of 3 series or something like that.
That would be better. Yeah, right? I mean that's the one, like the way the NBA does it. It is boring for like trying. You know, there aren't the upsets. There aren't the Cinderella runs because in an NBA 7-game series, the best team's going to win. Like unless there's a bunch of injuries, the better team is going to win far more often than not. But the ratings don't seem to get hurt by it. Like people are still tuning in to see the Warriors or, you know, the Celtics or the Nuggets. They're still tuning in to watch it. Like people do want to see excellence. And we talk about, you know, need for parity, but like there's no parity in the NFL. Like there's parity as far as teams who get to the playoffs every year, but it's always Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady or Peyton Manning winning the Super Bowl in the end. It's always the same teams who end up winning because they have the best quarterback. So the like the parity in the idea of it is more of an illusion in most sports. And I think that it's the same way at the college level where we want there to be parity. But then when there is parity, most people don't really enjoy it that much.
Probably not.
Which is why everyone's kind of excited about this next Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Like almost all the good teams are still left.
Yeah, so it's going to be great.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, should we talk Illinois, Iowa State? Like, how are you Let's feeling? Talk.
Yeah.
I'm nervous. Like, I think that, again, there's a lot of luck in the tournament, and we'd be lying our asses off if we said we didn't catch some of it, because you get Morehead State, which we earned. We were the 4 seed. You earned a 13 seed in the first round. So, and we took care of business there. You know, there was nothing scary. It wasn't like the Chattanooga game a few years ago where it's like, what the hell are we doing? Why is this team hanging around? Why are we letting them hang around? And then, like, I'll admit, I was watching that BYU-Duquesne game, and there was a part of me that was like, I hope BYU wins. Not because it's like, I want to face the best of the best, but because I was looking at BYU's guys and I'm like, there is nobody on that team who will be able to guard Terrence Shannon. They are too slow. They are not athletic enough. He is going to score 40 points on these guys, just drive by them at will. And I was watching Duquesne and I was like, these guys could cause problems. And I think Duquesne could have if we had let them hang around in the game. Like, I think the biggest difference, like just watching Illinois in that game and then watching like Wisconsin against James Madison. No disrespect to James Madison, but that was not a good basketball team. That was a basketball team that played nobody during the regular season. Yes, they had the win over Michigan State to open the year. I'm not taking that away from them, but Michigan State was 1-for-20 from 3. It was the first game of the year. Weird things happen, and they still needed overtime to win that game. But that was not a good basketball team. The problem was they were 31-3, so they thought they were a good basketball team, and they thought they were unbeatable. And then Wisconsin let them get off to a hot start and never gave them a reason to think we can't beat these guys. Illinois let Duquesne know within the first like 3 minutes of that game. Sorry, boys. I know your coach is retiring, but it's done. This just isn't going to happen for you. Congratulations on beating BYU, but your season ends tonight. And you could see that in their body language. They knew quick. We're screwed. We don't have any chance. So yeah. It was nice to have those first two games. But going to Iowa State, it's going to be so much different because Iowa State is a really good basketball team. And I think matchup-wise, you look at them, they don't have a lot of size overall, although they have good, you know, like they've got 6'8 guys, 6'7 guys. I think they've got a 6'10 guy that gets some minutes off the bench. And they're very small at guard. So I do think we're going to see some booty ball with Marcus Damask, and we're probably going to look to exploit that. But they are very good defensively. They don't give you anything easy. They harass you. They hurry you. They force you into mistakes. They will force you into turnovers. And that is something that worries me because if Illinois doesn't take care of the basketball and they start giving away possessions, Iowa State is not the kind of team that's going to score 80 to 90 points on you. That's just not the way they're built. But they can make it really difficult for you to score 80 or 90 points. And I don't know if Illinois gets stuck in that kind of low-scoring affair. It's not really a situation we've seen them in a whole lot this year. And I don't know how they will be able to handle it. And also, like, our fans are going to travel, but their fans are going to travel too. Like, Iowa State fans are nuts. You can expect that there will be a lot of them in Boston. So I don't know what the atmosphere is going to be like for this game. I'm hoping it's 50-50.
Omaha was really loud. Yes. There were so many Iowa State fans. Like, I was there, and there was a, like, I don't know, 4-1 Iowa State fans to Illinois fans. Granted, like, it's a driving distance for them versus us. We'd have to fly or take a 9-hour train ride home like I did. But
was it a nice train ride at least?
It was good. I slept most of it. Like, little scenes of Iowa and
just corn and grass everywhere.
Yes, just corn. But hopefully with the flight to Boston, that'll be make it easier. But, and also I imagine there's going to be a lot of UConn fans there.
Oh, yeah.
And the good thing is, because we're the 3 seed, those fans might be supporting Illinois because they don't want to play the 2 seed. But we'll see there. But Iowa State does trap the post a lot. So that's what I'm really interested in, is like, if Marcus, like he showed in that Morehead State game, he can pass the ball out of the trap and set other guys up. So that'll be like very interesting to watch. One thing in support of us though is our boy KenPom. While there's not a prediction of us winning, he does, like, there's a stat that I think no team that's ever not been in the top 25 has made the Final Four. And he tweeted this saying, like, is Iowa State – and oh, no team preseason top 25 and a 1 or a 2 seed made the Final Four. So I think that kind of speaks to, like, the underlying talent on the roster. Like, teams ahead of the season, they didn't see a great roster. And then usually, like, that happens in the tournament where you just, like, didn't have good enough roster. So I'm hoping that plays out. But I don't know, like, do you think Lipsy is really good? Do you think they have a talent enough roster compared to us?
I mean, they don't have a Ty Halliburton anymore, which I'll thank God for that. Yeah. But, like, yeah, I think Timmin Lipsy, he's a good player. Like, he's not he's not like an explosive scorer. Like, he can score, but he's not somebody that I sit there and I worry about just going off. Like, if you can guard him and just don't let him get easy looks from three, I think that you could, you know, really minimize where he does most of his damage. So, they're a good team, but like I said, it's offensively, there's nobody on them that really scares me. It's just going to be, can we take care of the basketball and can we, you know, just do enough on offense? Because that's the thing. Like, I think there was a period there where defensively, like, the numbers are the numbers. And there was a period of a couple weeks there where defensively we were just absolutely, we were atrocious. Like, it was a swinging gate. I do think that has improved since the start of the Big Ten tournament. I still don't think we're what I would ever consider a good defense or an elite defense, but I do think we've turned it up a notch in this little winning streak that we're on to get to this point. And I think that, you know, the way we played against Duquesne, again, huge talent disparity there that played a big role in it. And then just their confidence really wavered quickly and they were just done. But for us, for our guys, I think that's a confidence boosting performance, just shutting them down. So It we will have to defend and we will have to score. And how much more cliche of it can I get than that? Because that's really what this game is going to come down to. Can we score? Because they are very, very good on defense.
It is interesting. Like, I think the only team like remotely close to Iowa State we've even played this year is Purdue. So and then you play a 14 seed and 11 seed. So I wonder, like, if there's almost a shock factor within the first few minutes, but Illinois is playing well. And then the Big 12 was very interesting. Like, they did not have a lot of good non-con games. So they're almost like building on each other. And Iowa State plays a ton of close games and then randomly kills Houston in the Big 12 tournament championship game. So I don't know. I feel like this is one of the weirder, like, harder to predict matchups.
And technically, we haven't beaten a top 25 team, I guess, if you want to call FAU when we play them. But this would be our first top 25 team victory all year long. It's weird. It's like you're getting a good measuring stick of this team in the Sweet 16. Like, that does scare me a little bit. I know that's not fair because you play who you play. And we had chances in non-con against, you know, Tennessee and plenty of chances against Purdue. But this is your first big kid, you know, ranked win opportunity and comes in March.
No, I think it's totally fair because that is something that sits in the back of my head because I look at Illinois and what they've done this year. Like, they lost to Marquette. They lost to Tennessee. They lost to Purdue twice. Like, they have faced a number of the teams that are still remaining in this tournament, but they don't really have that kind of signature, quote unquote, resume win that you could, like, hang your hat on. So, and then, like, you just mentioned, like, Iowa State dog walked Houston. That was just an incredible game. But I also think Houston is one of those teams because they're not great offensively. When you do bury them, you could just keep piling on and they're going to lose, like, in blowout fashion more often than not. But so, yeah, I do think there is some doubt because, again, like I was just saying, we haven't beaten one of the top teams in the country this year. And I do think what's different, though, is outside of the Purdue games, you look at the losses in the non-conference to, like, Tennessee and Marquette, we were playing a different style. Like, we have changed the way we played during the season. Like, once Terrence got suspended and we went to the booty ball and all that kind of stuff, and we just kind of changed everything around and worked Terrence back in. But it is not the same offense. They're not running the same sets. They're not really running the same kind of philosophy. It's all a little bit different. So it'll be interesting to see how that works because, like, one of the things Brad has stressed in recent years, like, coming off of the Kofi teams, is he wanted to have bigger wings, and we have those guys now. And we're facing a team that, if you think about it, they don't have a Kofi, but they're kind of a lot like the Illini teams that suffered in the tournament. They have smaller wings or smaller guards and guys you can kind of overpower from that aspect. So hopefully, you know, we see the other side of the coin in this matchup.
I sure hope so. Yeah, that would be awesome. You brought up Brad. Let's talk about Brad here for a couple minutes. For whatever reason, really up until I think this point, Brad has for whatever reason been a little controversial to a lot of Illinois fans. I'm guessing for you, Tom, that hasn't been the case, that your faith in him has been unwavered. Like, why do you, and especially as someone who put so much stock into the Big Ten regular season and the Big Ten tournament, you of any human being on earth would come to Brad's rescue, especially before this weekend. And all of us here, Johnny and Sam and I are in agreement that, you know, the ridiculous trolls on Twitter that are saying fire Brad, like, there was never any credence to that. But for you, like, that's all just ridiculous conjecture, right? His job was never actually in danger or anything like that. How would you rank his tenure even before this weekend arrives? His job was never in your eyes even at risk.
No, I wandered the desert with this program for a very long time. Like, you have to, like, when I first started following the Illini basketball, when I was, you know, in high school and going to college, it was the end of the Lon Kruger era, which was good teams, not great teams, but good teams. They would get to the tournament and into the Bill Self era, which was, we were the best team in the Big Ten. And then Bill Self leaves for Kansas in the first few years of Bruce Weber. We get to the title game, we lose. And then a whole lot of bad came. And for somebody who grew accustomed to following this program from that Kruger Self and then early Weber years to where we were for the latter portion of Weber's tenure in the John Gross era, bro, we haven't gotten a Sweet 16 since 2005 until this year. We lost to Loyola. We lost to Arkansas in the tournament. I get it. It sucked. I wanted to win those games too. But we won the damn Big Ten. We won a Big Ten conference tournament. We won another one this year. These are levels of success that this program hadn't had at all for a very long time. So the idea, and again, this goes back to, like, I'm very much in the minority in how I view the importance of the NCAA tournament as far as whether the program is in good shape or not. Most fans look and say, they lost to Loyola. This guy sucks. He doesn't know how to coach. He got you there. He got you to the tournament as a one seed. You know when the last time Illinois was a one seed? So to just, like, dismiss that out of hand simply because of a result in a fluky one-and-done kind of tournament. And also, let's not forget the conspiracy against the Illini from the NCAA tournament selection committee.
Uh-oh, Johnny's gonna go crazy here. Don't ask Johnny. You know, it's funny because I was looking back at the questions from last interviews and when we had you on when we were one seed, and the question was something along the lines of, hey, we're playing Loyola. Do you feel like we got screwed in the draw? Like, do you feel like we're going to be okay against Loyola in the second round? And obviously, we know what happened, but
yeah, terrible matchup.
Terrible matchup. Top 8 KenPom team. But yes, it is a conspiracy. But thank you, Tom. I think more people need to hear that. And I think it's just a very vocal minority. I don't think it's like an actual contingent of people that are like, no, get rid of Brad. The standard is Sweet 16 after Sweet 16 after Final Four. Like, we haven't done any winning. The three of us went to school. We didn't see a single tournament game. You know, the coolest thing that I saw Kipper Nichols beat Michigan State, you know, in the last game of the season. Like, that was the coolest thing that I saw.
That's what we were reduced to. Yeah, it was like a regular season win to get to like 8-8 on the season. Yes!
Right, right. That's what we're reduced to. So I get it. The fans who have been fans for 20, 30, 40 years, who have seen 1989 in the early 2000s and 2005, it should be the standard. But when that's what you've been doing for the decade, 15 years prior, and now you're the goalposts are here, to me, that's just this is ungrateful fandom right there.
So now, now we've gotten to the point where if Illinois is not a top four seed in their region in the NCAA tournament, it was probably a bad year. Like, that's where Brad has gotten this program. We have gone from, God, I hope we can get to the tournament this year, to if we're a five seed, we must have sucked. You know what I mean? And that's like, that's what more could you ask for? Obviously, you can ask to have the national titles. You can ask to have the Final Fours, and I get it. I don't blame any Illini fan for wanting it. But I just think that you need, if you feel that way, have a little more perspective and context in the what you feel about the program. Because I'm not going to sit here and argue that Brad Underwood is an all-time great coach. He's one of the best in the country, blah, 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 yada, 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 because he doesn't have enough accolades to really kind of make that claim. But how many coaches are there in the country right now who you'd rather have over him?
Not a lot. I mean,
not Calipari.
I mean, the last 5 years, right? Big Ten play 69-31. Mm-hmm. If you could guarantee a 70% winning percentage for a 5-year span, yes. Would take that in a heartbeat. Like, it's insane. And the only person who is even close to that is Matt Painter. And he's one of the best coaches in the nation. So it's really.
We get to do it while playing a much more fun style of basketball. Whereas we were also there for a couple of years where I loved Kofi, but like that wasn't always the most entertaining basketball to watch, is just dump it to Kofi in the post and then he'll score. And that's pretty much what Purdue has been with Edie for 4 years now. It's like, I get it. I don't blame him a minute for doing it, but as a fan, it's not that fun to watch.
No, this is a fun style of play. I'll shout out Josh, who wasn't able to be here this evening. He asked us this question a couple weeks ago, and we talked about Brad, and I'm curious to hear this from you, Tom. It's like your all-time Brad Underwood starting five in Illinois' tenure. You got to put together a starting five. 40% of the lineup is kind of solidified, I think, and actually maybe 60 at this point, quite frankly. But we kind of went back and forth between the last two guys. There's a couple you could do. I'm assuming you have Io and Kofi.
Io, and Kofi, Terrence. Trent.
Oh, are you putting... Is Terrence a maybe?
Terrence is a maybe.
Ooh.
God, I mean, I think he would be on there, but it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to, do I want just the five best players?
Or do you got to put a lineup together. It's got to be like a legit team.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think Terrence has to be on there, and then I'd probably go with Coleman.
Ooh.
I think that'd be a pretty good lineup. Coleman, Terrence, Kofi, Trent, and Io. I think he probably won a lot of games.
That is a large lineup, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lineup.
Big, athletic, helps make up for Trent's lack of size. But, you know, you move Trent off the ball and just let him be a little sniper in the corner and a defensive pest. That works.
We talked about this, like, earlier in the season before Damask kind of, like, became the guy. But because he's another one who could fit into that four spot there. I actually said maybe DeMonte in there. Like, he was so good defensively, and you have so many guys who are going to have the ball that, like, hey, just put DeMonte in there and, like, have him just shoot the corner threes.
Then 1 year he'll just hit 50% of his threes out of nowhere. And you're like, what the hell?
Doubles every year. And then you had Johnny. You even threw out Grandy in there.
Grandison was the other one.
Just a little six-man Grandison. That's a pretty good. That's hard.
But I think DeMonte you'd probably rather have just because, like, pure defense as opposed to, like, but it is a fun one.
It's a good lineup. It's a good lineup.
What about this team specifically? Like, who, like, closing out the game, who are your five?
It depends on the matchup a little bit because, I think Dane is perfect, and we've seen it. Dane is perfect for some teams to play a lot of minutes against because they just don't have an answer for him. And, like, it allows him to stick to his strengths, which I think is what you want Dane doing, because I think he's very much a confidence player. So if he's winning battles early, it bodes well. So if he's been playing well, I would have Dane at the end of the game. But if Coleman's been playing well the entire game, I think that he's so important to a lot of what they do offensively. But as far as everybody else, let's see. I'd go Terrence, obviously. Damask, obviously. I don't like Ty in late game situations. I love Ty, but I don't like him because of the foul shooting and all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure I'd really want him out there. I think I'd want Quincy out there just for the offensive rebounding and then cross my fingers and pray he's able to hit a shot that night. But I also think, yeah, so let's go Coleman, Terrence, Marcus.
It is a toss-up.
This is the thing. As long as those three are out there, I'm not that concerned about the other two. So Coleman, Terrence, Marcus, give me Quincy for the rebounding, and then whoever the hell's hot that day.
Yeah, it's almost a compliment to the team how deep it is that, like, you don't have the definitive answer. And that was something that I wanted to jump in and talk about when we were saying, like, oh, yeah, we lost to Marquette, we lost to Tennessee. Like, that team didn't have Dane Danger playing at the level that he's playing at right now. Like, he was early in the season, middle of the season, just, like, a different guy, and we weren't able to utilize him correctly. And same thing, the one guy that we need to, like, kind of get back to playing earlier in the season is Justin Harmon, because that's a dude who, like, at his best is able to defend guards well and make open threes, but he hasn't made a three in, like, over a month.
Years.
We're not going to talk about it.
It's been bad. It was, like, 1-for-19 or something. I might be, exacerbating that a little bit, but it's been tough. Yeah, so I don't know if you can play. He's not in your five there down the stretch.
Not right now. If he's playing well that day, for sure. But not right now. There's a reason Brad's been playing Lawhorn more lately, because he's just trying to find somebody who can provide the kind of spark that they're just not getting offensively from Harmon. And I think, honest to God, like, Lawhorn strikes me as somebody who, if he sticks around for like 3 or 4 years, is going to be like a very, very, very popular player among this fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the stones on that guy in the NCAA tournament game. Yes. You see, like, Ty fumbling the ball in his first game. Other people are nervous and just immediately, like, ice, three, three, just awesome. Like, I feel like next year's perfect role for him would be, like, the sixth man who comes in and just, like, jacks up a bunch of shots, you know? Like, just be the irrational confidence guy, because I know you have irrational confidence, and, like, go through the Trent Frazier school of defense where you just get, like, incrementally better at defense every year and, like, learn how to play with your smaller size. But
and that's the thing too. Like, it's not a question of effort from him on the defensive end, because he's trying. It's just he's small and he doesn't really know how to do it yet, but he's willing to do whatever you ask him to.
Right. Yeah. He's done. Yeah, absolutely. So talking about obviously the round of 16. I'm curious though, if we make it to the Final Four, given how much you do or don't care about Illinois' tournament success, the narrative that I'm creating here, is that Tom Fernelli does not care about Illinois in the tournament. Would you go to the Final Four? Would you go and witness it live? Maybe your employer will, like, let you cover it there for free or something. Would you go?
No.
Wow. Tom Fornelli does not care about the tournament at all. Shut it down, folks.
I've gone to plenty of sporting events. I've been to plenty of title games. I'd rather watch the game at home.
I was going to ask, like, what is your like dream at this point in life? If Illinois is in the title game, what's, like, your dream watching scenario? Is it in your living room in, like, a packed bar?
At home with people over. Like, I'd rather be watching it in my house than surrounded by thousands upon thousands of people, where, especially because, like, you can't see everything the same way you could see it when you're watching on television. It's like when you're at the game, unless you have really good seats, you're missing a whole lot of what's happening. Like, and that's, like I said, I've covered a lot of games in person. I've been at title games and I'll be sitting there just watching the game on the scoreboard because I have absolutely no idea what the hell's going on if I just look at the field and I'm trying to write about what's happening in the game. So it's hard for me. So I prefer viewing from home because I want to know what's going on. I don't want to just react to the feelings. I'm trying to watch the actual game being played.
Especially in the football stadiums, like, there's always that guy that tweets out his ridiculous view at, like Lucas Oil Stadium or something, where he's in the 600 level. And it's like, I think that's a basketball court down. I think that's a court down there.
Yeah, and that you are way the hell up there at Lucas Oil, and it is cold. Like, because you are right under the air conditioning, and it's the same thing at the Superdome. You're right under the air conditioning units. So it is like a good 10 to 15 degrees colder in there than it is in the rest of the stadium. And when I was there for the Alabama-Georgia title game when they had that in Indianapolis a couple of years ago, I was freezing in there. That building was so cold. It was incredible. Anyways, that's some behind the scenes for you.
And so then I'm just, I have to ask then, is that for every, like, Bears in the Super Bowl, White Sox are in the World Series, you're not going to those. It's game seven at guaranteed rate. It's a Super Bowl in SoFi Stadium. You're not going to those either.
I was at both White Sox home games for the World Series.
Oh, so jealous.
It was fun. I mean, I was 24 too. So it's like, it's a very different time in my life at that point, but it's just, I would rather be at home. Like, it's just being in person to me. I think the experience of being in the, just the energy around it is useful and it's fun. But for me, who wants to pay more attention to the game, I don't give a crap about the energy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm just trying to, I want to see what they're running. I want to see what they're trying to do. I want to try to figure out what we're going to do to counter it and make it, you know, to turn things around and get things in our favor or to keep things going in a certain direction. And it's just really difficult to do that from the actual stadium, unless you are, like, if you're in the coach's box, you could, like, that is the one thing. When I go to the title game, if I wasn't having to cover the game and, like, write and tweet as it's going on, and I was just able to sit there and watch the football, it'd be a very different answer. But that's just not the way it works. So maybe as a fan, if I was able to go, but I was in the press box and they weren't expecting me to do a damn thing for work, then yeah, I would probably go.
Fair enough.
It is funny. We were, Illinois had a few guys scouting the Wazoo Iowa State game before ours, sitting second row. And I think we were talking about this. We're like, is it like, I think I'd rather scout it on TV, like, and get the perfect camera angle for each play.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, speaking of TV, sorry, Tom, but I hate to interrupt. Does Johnny's face look familiar at all to you?
Yeah, he was on TV the other day. They were
okay. Just
about 20 times.
Just making sure, you know, because he's getting somebody, recognized.
Who was it that, like, threw a pass to you? Pretty much, right?
Yeah, someone on on Duquesne was just like, over here.
It's a ball in the fourth row.
Buddy.
Yeah, Johnny is going to be at the Johnny is team pro team at the game. Feel the energy. Get on TV like 9 times and be like, get that shit, do the get that shit out of here.
Yeah,
I thought that was
like,
my co-host on Cover 3, Danny Cannell, was at the NC State Oakland game the other night because his nephew plays for NC State, and they show him on the broadcast, and they're talking about him, and they're like, Steve Lapis, who's calling the game, says, oh, and he's a great golfer. Like, what? Like, not only are they showing him on the broadcast, but they're also gassing up his golf game. Like, what the hell? So Danny was just, he's been impossible the last 3 days. He's like, yeah, the whole world knows I'm good at golf now.
That's all. They will not be gassing up Johnny's game.
They would not be saying that about me. That's
what they would be saying about
my
either.
Golf game. We'd be having some problems. but yeah, it's being at the game is a lot of fun. Watching at home is honestly sometimes more stressful, though. Like that Morehead State halftime game, I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, just thinking about that our season was going to be over potentially, like 20 minutes down the road.
You were legit worried in that game?
Yes. 100%.
I was legit worried.
100%.
Now, like, I should have trusted the team more, but it was more just knowing that, like, all we could have is one off shooting half and your season's done.
So you were just still suffering from, like, the existential dread of Illinois tournament success, and you're like, oh my god, they're going to lose this game. Oh my, yeah. See, 100%. I was not lacking in confidence at any point in that game.
Well, that's because you have nothing to lose. Because you don't care about the
true.
To lose. You
don't care
about the tournament. Yeah. You know, you don't care.
I mean, the fact
that
I was even watching was probably the biggest upset of the day.
Right.
Point,
I mean,
if I have time here.
If it were like a non-con game in November, I would have been like, we'll figure this shit out. But I think it's because, like Johnny said, that you're in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I might not get to watch this team play. That kind of feeds into it.
You're like pacing around 30 minute halftime. You don't know what's going on in the arena. There's a Sky Rizzy commercial, and you're like, wait a minute,
it's a
like
two.
Yeah. 20 minutes, like,
yeah, that part is scary. So we should have trusted the team. I mean, that was their fourth game in a row where they went nuclear in the second half. So I should have trusted them, but I think it's just in the back of your mind, you're thinking, damn, this could be it. You're not prepared to be done watching this team after a Morehead State. So I couldn't wrap my mind around that. So
yeah, and I guess the difference between me and Tom too, like my first thought was like, I'm not ready to start thinking about Illinois football. Like that's, I was like, I'm not ready to start thinking about the offseason, all that stuff. And that's Tom's job. So maybe it's just, he's always thinking about that. So
see, I am. Like, I'm watching Illinois basketball saying to myself, man, Dane Danger should be playing tackle. Like, if we could put him at left tackle this year, that man could make a lot of money as a professional in his future. I'm happy he's doing well on the basketball team, but I think he could have made more money playing football.
All right, so let's ask you about that, because football is your main thing that you cover here. Vegas has us at over, I think, 5.5. Look, I'm a diehard. I consider myself one of the 17 for Robert. Even I think that that's just an absurd number. Like, am I insane to say that that's just a ridiculous number this year?
You think it's too low or too high?
Too high. I think 5.5 is a lot.
Okay, yeah. I don't know if I'd call it absurd. I do think that it is. It's not going to be easy, because I do think you're going into next year and you've lost so much off the roster. Like, I mean, it was one thing last year when they lost the secondary, and it's like, okay, but the defensive front's still there. We could probably figure this out, but you've also got a new defensive coordinator, got a new quarterback, but we've got, you know, a bunch of veteran receivers, and now those veteran receivers are gone. Now the defensive front that you relied on are gone. You still have the same defensive and offensive coordinator, which is nice, but you also have had turnover on the coaching staff. And this schedule is just getting more difficult, because now that you've added USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon, and they're changing the way that they schedule things, you don't get the West anymore. So it's like, it's not as easy to find those kind of wins that you kind of look at on the schedule every year as an Illini fan and say, got a shot to win that game. So I'm with you. It is going to be tough. That said, they better win 6 games, because I don't know. I think for the most part, Brett Bielema's tenure at Illinois has been a positive one with the fan base, and the feelings are good. I think that if they fail to make a bowl 2 years in a row, that will probably start turning pretty quick. So I think that, you know, Luke Altmaier, second year in the offense, he had his high moments. He also had his, like, get rid of the damn ball moments, or what are you doing moments. But I think that if he grows and improves, you should see improvement in the offense overall, even with the new receivers being worked in. I do think the offensive line will actually be better this year. I think talent-wise, they're going to be stronger, so I think that's a benefit for them. But there are a lot of question marks for me on defense. Like, there's a lot of big names and big production that you have to fill in and replace this year, and that's still going to be a question mark. I need to see people do it. Now, the good news is, throughout Brett Bielema's tenure as a coach, his teams have typically been able to replace their defensive production and move on. So there's reason to believe it'll happen. It's just, it's a wait-and-see approach to me. Like, I think this team could be 7-5 and 8-4 if everything goes great. I could also think they could be 3-9, 4-8 if it doesn't.
Where are these eight wins coming from? Again, Tom, I'm as diehard Illinois as it gets, but where are these eight wins? We're going to Eugene. Like, where are these eight wins coming from? There is no room to falter when we go.
If things go well, you can beat Kansas. Like, I'm not going to look at Kansas football and tell myself there's some sort of juggernaut. And also, Kansas did lose its offensive coordinator, who is a big part of what they do. Once you get into conference, yeah, Oregon's I do not see many scenarios in which Illinois walks into Eugene and takes down the Ducks. But if you look around the rest of the Big Ten, who's the best quarterback in the Big Ten next year?
Oh, that's a good question.
Besides Luke Altmaier.
It's, what's his face? Is it the Penn State kid? Is it the Penn State
Drew
kid?
Aller, yeah.
Drew Aller?
I don't know. He's, that's the point.
Who's
the Oregon quarterback?
Dylan Gabriel.
Dylan Gabriel. You can argue Dylan Gabriel is the best quarterback in the Big Ten. And Dylan Gabriel is a good quarterback. He's very accomplished. He's been around a long time. But there's also a reason he's still in college and not in the NFL. Like, he's a good college quarterback. Like, one of the things, too, like, I look at Ohio State. I don't think Kyle McCord was some sort of juggernaut. Like, I don't think he was Justin Fields or C.J. Stroud or any of the guys that they had in their recent years. But I don't think Will Howard's any kind of definitive upgrade over Kyle McCord. I think they're pretty much the same, except Howard's a little more mobile. So I don't know what the quarterback situation is going to look like there. The quarterback situation at Michigan, nobody knows. Like, it's not even just that Harbaugh left. It's like, you don't know who the QB is going to be. So you look around the league. I think Ohio State's going to be the best team in the Big Ten. I think that they're just too talented everywhere else, even if they are kind of questionable at QB. But other than that, I don't see anybody in this league and look at them as being a definitive juggernaut. I see a lot of teams that could be between that 4-8, 8-4 window. So if Illinois stays healthy, catches some breaks, and gets things going, I think there's a path to 8 wins.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So I'll instead of saying the wins, maybe the losses would be like Oregon, Michigan, Penn State.
Don't just assume they're losing to Michigan.
Wow. All right. I guess it's in Champaign.
A lot of draft picks. Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. I guess, again, this is my
Red Grange. Yeah.
This is my Illinois brain. Same brain that when we're down at halftime to Moorhead State, can't get myself to just be like, we might be all right. It's the same fraction of the brain there that it just won't trust. But we'll be in Eugene. So, I mean,
here, go.
We're going.
If
you want to come
place.
With us, Tom, by all means, come with. It's Sam's. We're doing Sam's bachelor party out there in Eugene for that weekend. So
you guys, I'm assuming you've never been there.
We have not.
Never been to Eugene. No,
it's a very nice place. It's a very fun place to be, especially if it's a great place for a football game too. You'll have a lot of fun.
Good. Maybe the final score.
It'll probably be raining, but you won't care.
Oh no, I have a weird feeling that we won't care at all. But
we'll
you have
bigger things to worry about.
You probably won't even feel it if you're having a good time.
Yeah, so. We're having a good time. Yeah, so we're going to be doing push-ups with the duck, so we're going to be feeling really good. But obviously you mentioned like losing a lot of production on the line there. Johnny Newton, where is he going? How high can he go? What about pick number 9? Let me just throw something out there. Pick number 9. They're looking at D line. What do you think?
It could happen. I don't think it will. I think that if you look at Johnny, I think talent-wise, the way that this class is built, maybe if you're desperate for an interior defensive lineman, Johnny could go really early, but I just look at the class, and obviously there's a lot of talk about how the first 4 picks could be quarterbacks, and they could be. Something tells me that's not what's going to happen. I think that you often hear this time of year, like the quarterback class gets hyped up because people want you to, especially teams in the top 10, who might be wanting to trade down, want you to think that these guys are great. So all these teams, when you talk to them, they're like, oh, this McCarthy's great. Penix is great. May is great. Daniels, everybody's great. But it is a good quarterback class, and people are desperate for quarterbacks, so they will trade up to get them. I think it's an incredible wide receiver class, and I think it's an incredible offensive tackle class, and I do think that most of the first round will be quarterbacks, wide receivers, and offensive tackles. And when you look at the position Johnny plays, I think it's him and Byron Murphy are really the only two candidates to be the first one off the board as far as interior defensive tackle, 3 techniques, whatever the hell you want to call them, however you use them in your defense. So I think he could be a top 15 pick. I also think he could be a late first round pick or an early second round pick. It's really going to depend on his health and how he tests with teams when he actually gets to work out for them and they see that he's 100% healthy. If he's 100% healthy, he's going to be a first round pick. If there's any concerns, they're just going to use it as a knock against him because he's already quote unquote undersized. But I don't, the size does not matter to me. In fact, I think a lot of times, because Byron Murphy's not big either, I think a lot of times at that position, being smaller is somewhat to your advantage because of the leverage you're able to create when you're going up against an offensive lineman to stay below him and get past him. And I think with Johnny, the way he uses his hands, he uses his size as an advantage because he gets underneath the guy and is strong enough to move him off and get by him. And that's what he's done so consistently in Illinois. Because I saw Brett Bielema did a podcast last week. He tweeted a clip from it. And the one thing he said, which is true, is you don't really see a lot of players from that position who can take over games. And you saw Johnny Newton take over games multiple times as a defensive tackle, which is just ridiculous. It shows you how good and how talented he is. It also shows you how maybe bad the offenses of the Big Ten West were. But we'll just push that to the side and ignore that. I do think he is a very, very good prospect. I don't know where he's going to get picked, but I do have a certain level of confidence that he's going to be a good NFL player.
You, as a college football guy, and this is kind of like a meatball sports fan question, assuming NFL scouts aren't genius and paid a ton to do their job. But so that's what I was going to ask. Do you, just as a college football guy, ever see kind of some sort of swirl or buzz or momentum on a player and you're you're overthinking this?
Yes.
Because it's such a fascinating process, the NFL draft, where I feel these teams almost talk each other into oh yeah, Trey Lance and Zach Wilson, they're better than just it's such a phenomenon.
It's not to say that NFL scouts are dumb or anything, because they're not. They are very good at their jobs for the most part. There's a reason they have their jobs. It's just, if they were geniuses or if they were so much smarter than everybody else, then there would never be a bad draft pick, because they would know exactly what they were looking for every single time. And there is definitely there are plenty of examples of teams just kind of coming to a conclusion, but like the process is so damn long. And like, you start, like, I have been saying Caleb Williams was the best quarterback for 2 years. All right. No doubts about it. I'd watched him play. I did the meme, you know, like Pam Beasley from The Office, find the difference between these two pictures or the same picture. It was Patrick Mahomes and it was Caleb Williams, because they really are.
Tom, don't do this
to me. People talk about.
Don't do this to
me. No, I'm not saying he's going to be Patrick Mahomes. What I'm saying is, you always hear this guy, he's Mahomes-esque. Yeah, in like workouts and pro days, he makes those crazy throws. Caleb Williams to this point is the only quarterback I have seen in games at the college level do the stuff that Mahomes does, as far as reminding you of him. Like, it's clear Caleb Williams watches Patrick Mahomes and models his game after him. Not saying he's going to be Patrick Mahomes. But I've said for you, this is the best quarterback in the country. And then season goes through, and I'm watching tape. And I've watched all of Caleb's tapes a million times. I know what he's great at. I know his flaws. But then I haven't watched it in a while, so I'm watching Drake May, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe Drake May is better than Caleb Williams. I don't know. I'm liking a lot of these throws. And it's like I'm watching Jaden Daniels. You know, maybe Jaden Daniels is the best one of these guys. And then you go back and you watch the Caleb Williams tape, and you're like, oh, wait, no. Never mind. But that happens. Like, this process is so long, and you do so much work, and there's really only so much you can do as far as watching tape and evaluating these guys, that you kind of talk yourself out of things that you were already dead set on, or you talk yourself into things that you didn't really – you like a month ago you said I'm never going to do this, and then a month later you're like, actually, you know what, maybe. So yeah, NFL teams do that, and the scouts you talk to, they do that as well. Like, they will get caught in loops, and then at the end you just hope you have more hits than misses.
Yeah, I feel like as fans we're just very biased, because when Devin Witherspoon went up the draft board, I was like, yeah, people actually started watching the film. They didn't know some random corner from Illinois just shut down everyone, and then they actually watched it. But now with Johnny Newton, I'm like, oh, people are now overthinking it. But that's just because we clearly like want one thing versus the other to happen. The Marvin Harrison one is crazy. Yeah.
I was on Cover 3 all last year hyping up Devin Witherspoon and getting called an Illinois homer. And then it's like, no, he's just legitimately awesome. And you're going to see it. He went as a top five pick. And it legitimately annoyed me when I'd be watching like NFL draft people, like, have you heard of this Witherspoon kid? Like, they'd be talking about him. Like, yeah, I've heard of him. Yes. In fact, name five songs off of his first album. I dare you to try. But like, yeah, with Marvin Harrison, it's the same situation in that, because he didn't test at the pro day. He didn't do any of that stuff. And the reason Marvin Harrison didn't do any of it is because you got guys running 4.2s and you got guys running 4.3s, and everybody's like wetting their pants over how amazing that is. Marvin Harrison's going to run a 4.5, which is really, really ridiculously fast. And for a man who is 6'5 with his frame and his strength to be able to run 4.5, that's plenty. That's all he's going to need. But if he runs a 4.5, all anybody's going to talk about is he's slow, because he's not as fast as Xavier Worthy, or he's not as fast as, you know, like Malik Nabers, who also did not run. So, yeah, the teams know, like with a prospect like Marvin Harrison, I like Roma Dunze better. Personally, I think that I think mentality wise, I have more confidence in him, because I do think, as talented as Marvin is, and as much as I love his approach, like when it comes to run blocking, Marvin blocks like his hair is on fire. And I love to see that from wide receivers. But there are times where, like, you watch him play, and when the route's not, like, the play's not designed to go to him, kind of loafs a little bit sometimes, which annoys me a little bit. This doesn't mean he's not going to be great. It's just, I never see Roma Dunze loaf. So I like a Dunze more because of that. But I think that as a prospect, Marvin Harrison is probably as safe as a pick as there is in not just this draft, but in most drafts, because at a minimum, he's going to be an all-pro wide receiver. Will he be an all-time great? I don't know. But at a minimum, he's going to be going to Pro Bowls.
No doubt. I need to run in and send the TikTok I sent to Johnny and Maddie this morning saying Roma Dunze is not great because some 20-year-old kid for 20 seconds said he wasn't. So
he had him as his wide receiver 6.
Yeah, TikTok draft Twitter. Some interesting fellows over there.
Yeah,
I will say, you know what? It's defensible. I don't agree with it, but it's defensible because this really is a very good wide receiver class. And I do think that with the top three, especially between Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze, I don't think they're separated by that much. I think that they're all three really good. They're just different.
Yeah.
Like Malik Neighbors is, I mean, he's got like Tyreek Hill speed, which is just something that is very, very valuable to have. And he's also a good route runner. He's not just fast. And in that offense, they don't ask him to run a whole lot of different routes, but the way he runs them is very precise and very smooth. And you could tell he's very well coached and he could run the other routes. He's just not being asked to. So like Malik Neighbors might end up being the best receiver in this class. Rome Odunze might end up being the best receiver in this class. Adonai Mitchell might end up being the best receiver in this class. It's a very talented class, and that's just the way the wide receiver position has worked now, where there's really, really good ones every year.
Isaiah Williams might be the best receiver in this class.
Well,
I mean, the combine performance as far as the speed was, I was actually kind of surprised. Like, I thought I knew Isaiah wasn't going to run a 4.2, but I was surprised by it. But Isaiah is a guy like, you saw him as soon as he started running the drills.
Yeah, okay. He was one of the fastest in the
drills. He's perfect. He's perfect. Yeah. He's running in a perfectly straight line while changing direction and catching everything that's thrown his way. That's great. And so it's like, he's one of those guys. It's like, he's a tape player. He's not going to be a tester. He's a tape player.
Right, right. I like that. I've never heard that, tape player versus test player. I like that. Tom, we appreciate you, you know, talking all this ball with us here. We'll hit you with one more Illinois basketball question. Let's bring it back. Just tell me, what's your prediction for the Sweet 16? How far is this team making it? And if we win it all, what's your post-game like celebration? How would you celebrate, Tom, if we did win the whole damn thing? But how far are we taking this puppy?
I think they win Thursday night. I think that it's going to be close. It's going to be, you know, poop your pants kind of moments where you're going to be nervous as hell. I don't think either team's ever going to pull away. Like, I think it's going to be at most like a 6-point game, like pretty much the entire 40 minutes. And it's just going to be a very, very terrifying experience. I think in the end they pull it out because they have the better players. And I think that in this time of year, when you have the better player, that usually ends up winning these close games more often than not. The real test will be like, pray for San Diego State to win. Because, like, it's not even just getting UConn in the Elite Eight. It's getting UConn in Boston, where 75 to 80% of that arena is going to be UConn fans. So it's pretty much going to be a Huskies home game. That is going to be difficult. Not to say they can't do it, because they can. Because they have a very good team and they have very good players. It's just, it's going to be really, really hard. So I do think they win Thursday, and then it's hope for the best for Saturday. And if they win it all, I will celebrate with a beer and going to bed.
I can't fault you for a celebration that intense right there. So what was your celebration then for when we won the Big Ten or the Big Ten tournament? Was it more intense than?
Yeah, he was popping champagne.
We're going club and we're popping champagne, because that had to have been a way more intense celebration.
Lit the town on fire, just incredible. No, I'm probably a beer and I went to bed. It was the afternoon too, so you know what are you gonna do? But no, I don't. I'll be very excited. I'm not going to go party in, though. It's like I'm past that stage. I'm an old man now. I just want to go to bed.
That's what's been great about this week, Tom, though, is I've actually kind of been celebrating the Big Ten tournament win more these past couple of days, because on Sunday, I was just pissed about the draw. I was pissed that we got BYU, and now we got through that weekend. We won 5 games in 8 days, and I'm like, all right. Let's look back to the fact that we just went 17-6 in the Big Ten, and now we have a chance to go to the Final Four.
And another thing too, like, we didn't talk about it, but I will bring it up because it does matter. Like, you talk about winning the Big Ten tournament the other day. We beat Wisconsin. I have a lot of friends who are Wisconsin fans. I have a lot of friends who are Purdue fans. I have a lot of friends who are Northwestern fans, and, you know, Michigan fans and Ohio State fans. That's another reason why, like, the Big Ten is a little more important to me, because you get to talk shit to your friends when you win these games. So when I win the Big Ten, so like, that was part of my celebration after Illinois beat Wisconsin. I was texting my friends who went to Wisconsin, just, you know, saying, what's up? How you doing? Did you enjoy the game? That kind of stuff. And then, yeah, you know, beer and bed.
Beer and bed. A text beer and bed.
We did have a question we scrapped, but now that you said, we have to bring it up. Which is your favorite Big Ten win streak? Is it Wisconsin or is it Michigan?
Michigan. I think. Ooh. Yeah. Because like, I don't know. There's a sense of arrogance about Michigan fans that it's just that it's nice to bring them down a peg or two. Like Wisconsin, for the most part, like they're annoying, but they're not arrogant about it. They're just, you know, it's like when they were beating us, it's like they let my friends let me know. Now that I'm beating them, I let them know, but they're not like, you know, a-holes about it. Michigan fans, when you bring it up to them, they're just like, I don't even care.
Yes, they do. Yes,
yeah,
you
I know.
Do.
That's what I'm saying.
That
yeah,
one, that one Michigan
care.
Fan you got in a fight with on Twitter today. I'm sure he doesn't care.
He doesn't care at all.
He doesn't care at all.
They have a national championship
he's not mad. He actually thinks it's funny.
Yeah, that's the answer is both win streaks. But yeah, that's a good. But thank you, Tom, so much. We really appreciate you joining us here this evening. Best of luck to all of us here the rest of the day, the rest of the tournament. We'll be watching with you. So thanks for listening, everyone. ILL.
ILL.